Now, Parmenides' argument, which I gave you last time, is a peculiar argument of this kind. It's an argument which gives you absolute certainty . You read that argument now again, and we shall see what kind of certainty is involved in that argument. Let me read out once again. Thou canst not know what is not. Now you can see the direct statement. Thou canst not know what is not. This is a certainty. You can never know that which does not exist. You can know only that which exists. It's a very sweeping statement. You can be sure of this statement. And then therefore he has put a parenthesis, that is impossible. Absolutely certain, there is no question of doubt about it. So he has picked up such a statement, such a datum, that is clinching. This is what happens when you become true philosophers. So many facts are given to you, and you are able to pick up one datum which is sweeping. That is why people like to read philosophers, if they at all like to read them, because philosophers are able to, after a lot of thinking, after a tremendous exercise of dealing with data, they are able to pick up some such statements, and they are able to formulate it. So this is a statement, this is a peculiarity of this argument. Thou canst not know what is not. That is impossible. Nor utter it. For it is the same thing that can be thought and that can be. It's a very simple statement actually. It says, if you examine your nature, you will always examine data in the light of your thought. That's the first thing that is said. Whatever you are going to decide, whatever you are going to judge, whatever you are going to know, it says, first of all, it is by the instrument of thought that you will do. And thought, this is the finding of the philosopher. Thought is so constituted that it can only focus upon that which exists. That which does not exist can never be applied on thought. Such is the nature of the thought. This is the key. Now this statement is irrefutable statement because it describes the very nature of thought. So if you can find out the nature of thought, which is the instrument of our knowledge, at least at our present level, then you can be sure of this statement. For thought can be applied only to that which exists. Now the second statement which is made . Although yesterday I put it to you with some kind of force, at this next stage now when we are more mature today than yesterday, this second statement which is made, when you examine, you will find fault with it. Although it looks very much convincing and very clinching, but you will find fault with it. It says, how then can what is going to be in the future, or how could it come into being? If it came into being, it is not. Nor is it if it is going to be in the future. thus is becoming extinguished and passing away not to be heard of. The thing that can be thought and that for the sake of which the thought exists is the same. For you cannot find thought without something that is, as to which it is uttered. This third statement is only repetition of the first statement. It is clinching. But the second statement, the middle argument, although may seem to be only elucidation of the first, it says something more and it is illegitimate. I will not ask you now to find out where is this illegitimacy. Let it go on drilling in your mind for some time. We shall come to this second statement and find out where there is a fallacy in this argument. It's an argument, seems only a restatement of the first statement, but it is not. It's something much more.